Hello, welcome to another edition of The Walk. Tuesday morning, so this one's being recorded on the day I will be actually uploading the podcast to Jellycast. So, yes, rather than the usual Monday morning. So I'm probably feeling a little bit more upbeat today. We've made a dent in the week already, and that's good. Okay, so nice morning. It's getting windy now. It's October, so you know, how long we'll be able to keep this going with any kind of audio quality, we'll have to wait and see. Confession to make, I actually recorded this podcast yesterday at home. It was a static podcast rather than walking. Two reasons it didn't work, really. One is that I almost felt too prepared having notes and things around me, and it was a bit strange. I'm quite used to doing this off the cuff almost. I have in my mind a few things that I'm going to talk about, but I certainly don't have a running order and, you know, a script or anything like that. And I think probably my mind works quite well in that situation. I've always been a bit of a blagger, and that's something I've been able to do so far for the previous four shows, this being number five. You can tell I haven't got a script. I haven't actually introduced myself yet. I'm Richard Price, and you can follow me on Twitter at RichardP1975. Okay, continuing. So like I say, I recorded this yesterday, actually in a room. And the other thing that was wrong with it is because I didn't have a time limit. I could go on as long as I wanted. Whereas, of course, this walk kind of gives me a certain amount of window in which to actually record the podcast. And what was noticeable is that I was rambling on much longer on all of the subject areas. And so the podcast didn't really have that sort of concise and, you know, rapid feel to it that I think it does when I do it like this. So I'm not sure that was it was a good idea. Actually, it was a good idea to get it done, but I'm not sure it's going to be something that works in the future. So at the moment, this is the format we're going to stick with. We've already gone on longer than I imagined we would when I started doing this. You know, this is my fifth show, and people do seem to like it. I'm getting new listeners. I'm not sure if I'm keeping many of the old ones. That's the issue I might have. You know, people listen to it once or twice. Do they come back? You know, feedback is really appreciated. I'm not getting many comments left on the Jellycast page. I'm not getting many tweets about it, although I've had a few, so thank you to those people. On the subject of feedback, you know, last week I asked for people to come back to me on things they were annoyed about in the workplace. I asked for emails to richardp1975@gmail.com with the subject header workspace, or tweets to richardp1975 on Twitter with the hashtag workplace. Was it workspace? Yeah, I've forgotten now. You know, that's handy, isn't it? Anyway, had a few responses, grateful for those, would have liked some more, but, you know, hey, I can't make people respond, and hopefully, you know, it's just a sign of something that might grow. Thank you very much, first of all, to Callum VS, somebody who I think follows me, and I follow him by our mutual like of the Daniel Ruiz Tyson podcast, and Please Don't Hug Me. So, you know, I've got a bit of an audience through that. I hope people have got another, you know, got space in their life for another quirky podcast. Daniel's certainly done his bit to help promote me, so thanks to him. Callum said a couple of things in the workplace that irk him. One is the shared toilet space. This has been done to death on Daniel's show. Daniel having a particular thing about it. So I'm not going to go on too much about this, other than to say, I know what Callum means, but I've not got a major problem with it myself. You know, if I see somebody in the toilet that I work with, it's not a particularly big deal to me. One of the things I think is a bit uncomfortable is when, you know, you're in the cubicle and somebody comes in. I must admit, at that point, I will often wait in the cubicle until that person has left the bathroom or toilet, so they don't identify me as the person coming out of the cubicle. That's definitely something that I do, and I imagine there's a lot of people like that. If that person comes into the toilet and then goes into a cubicle, then obviously I'm as quick as I can at getting out of there before they come out. So it's, you know, so I spare them that discomfort of being seen. That's a sort of weird thing that I do, and I think I'm hoping I'm not the only one. So thanks for that, Callum. Callum's other thing, Callum said when a member of the opposite sex, an attractive member of the opposite sex, says hello to a colleague of yours but ignores you, he says this is a real kick in the teeth, if you like, a real blow to his morale. I haven't experienced this. I'm not trying to make myself out to be a player of any description, but I must admit I've never really noticed that in the workplace. Callum's obviously been smited by somebody in particular, I would imagine. I think it clearly bugs him. Callum, you know, you'll be fine, mate. You'll be fine. Just let it wash over you. I'm sure this person knows you're married and have kids, or I'm assuming now myself. I know you've got children, because I've seen you talk about them on Twitter. So just imagine it's because they know you're not available, and perhaps they don't want to build their own hopes up, so they've blanked you out of their mind. Okay, I also had some suggestions from Purple Helen on Twitter. Thank you, Helen, for your feedback. She has come back to me and said that a couple of things in the workplace that particularly get her goat. One is the over zealous manager. I think she called them a craven fucking shit, actually. I wonder if they've got anybody in particular in mind. Often they do in these cases. Helen says, you know, when they'll step on you to get promotion and they don't really, you know, they don't have any regard for you, that you're just there almost. I think she's implying that you're there as a stepping stone to them getting on, and they don't so much as look down at what they're treading in, if there's a chance of them gaining from it. I've seen this. Worked in a firm where the culture was all about me, me, me. Getting yourself noticed constantly, at the expense of others. Everybody was trying to take credit for everybody else's work. And certainly desperate to make sure that they got the credit for their own. So it was one of those places where literally everybody's singing their own praises the whole time. You know, I couldn't handle this. It wasn't somewhere I was ever going to flourish, and I didn't last a great deal of time at that firm before effectively I was moved on. So I do hate that culture, and I know exactly what Helen means. The other thing that Helen said, and I've got to rack my brains here, this is the problem with not having notes. Come back to it, I think. What did Helen say? Ah, yes. Pre-meetings. A meeting where you are effectively meeting before the real meeting in order to decide the agenda, because somebody more important will be attending the meeting itself. I mean, this is an absolute nonsense, because of course they're doing this to ensure that that person's valuable time isn't taken up unnecessarily, so they manage to waste, you know, a whole number of other people's valuable time in the process. I think what would have been more sensible in that situation, put an email around to a few people, get their ideas for the agenda, formal agenda, and then invite the manager. You don't need to meet. This is just an extra meeting. And this manager's thinking, oh, you know, well done, I can come along now and I've got this agenda and you're not wasting my time. But you've wasted a hell of a lot of time anyway. And I just think any reason why you get an extra meeting in, you've really got to look at and say, why are we doing this? A complete waste of time. The organisation I work for at the moment, you know, it's shrinking by the day, but yet the number of meetings, and certainly the number of managers, doesn't appear to be shrinking at all, which is absolutely ridiculous. I don't want to get chippy about it, but it's obvious that there's a hell of a lot of self-preservation going on, and people attending meetings to make sure that they're there when certain decisions are made. Don't blame them, but that's the culture we've got there now. Thanks again to Callum and Helen for those contributions. I've actually written a piece on workplace annoyances. I've submitted it to Sabotage Times. I hope they publish it. Only submitted yesterday, so it could be any number of weeks before it appears on their site. If it doesn't appear that they will use it, then it will appear on my blog, and I will let people know when it's there to read. It doesn't include any of the things that Callum and Helen have mentioned there, but it does include the rant I had there about chill-out zones or breakout zones that I mentioned in the last show, among other things. Okay, moving on. A quick advertisement here. If you haven't seen the documentary movie that was just released on DVD and Blu-ray yesterday, Senna, of course, about Ayrton Senna, the late, great Formula One world champion, I urge you to do so. Neither me or my wife are Formula One fans, although I must admit I was much more interested in the sport back in those days of Ayrton Senna and Alan Prost. But absolutely fantastic film, and I enjoyed it so much, you know, I can't wait to watch it again, to be honest. The story of his career, and obviously his untimely demise in the days where safety was a lot less of a factor in Formula One. Four serious accidents in the same weekend, at the same Grand Prix, two deaths, one of which, of course, was Ayrton Senna himself. Okay, enough of that plug. Diet update. Last week I opened up to you and shared with you the fact that I was, you know, gonna try again and lose some weight. I attended the slimming group on the night that the podcast was released. I'm not gonna talk specific weights. What I will say is a little positive. I was about a stone lighter than I feared I might be. I've managed to keep a stone of the four stones that I lost previously off, so I wasn't quite back to square one. But I think hopefully I've arrested it in time to ensure that, you know, I don't end up back where I was. And hopefully now I can travel in the right direction again. Another thing that surprised me slightly was that since I last attended the Slimming Group on the 10th of May, so basically the whole summer, I've actually only gained 0.5 pound in weight. So really negligible there. That slightly surprised me, but I was obviously pleased. I'll go again later on, where I will get the results of my first week's efforts. So next week I'll update you on how much I lost, gained, or obviously whether I stayed the same. I felt like I had a good week. Certainly, for 5 days anyway. Must admit, the weekend was hard, and whilst I didn't completely abandon the diet, I certainly deviated on a few occasions. So I'm not going to get the brilliant results I would hope for. But if I can lose a few pounds, then we're moving in the right direction. Cliche, yes, but that's the only way I can think. So we'll see how it goes later on today. And thanks for a few words of encouragement on that front. And people seem very, appreciative that I'd shared, really, and that my words were very personal to me and very difficult to share in many ways. People seemed glad that I'd opened up and shared this sort of struggle with you. And so hopefully you'll appreciate me continuing to update you on my progress. It's a difficult battle, but it's one that I've got every intention of winning. But that doesn't necessarily mean I'll succeed, of course. Right. The next thing I wanted to talk about, lying, something which, again, Daniel's kind of done to death in a way, but yet I feel I can add to it and give you a little bit of a taste of my experience of people, or a particular person in fact, that managed to lie to me for a hell of a long time. And it's an interesting story, I think. First of all, I just kind of pray see some of Daniel's golden rules about lying. I'm not sure he ever kind of coined them as such, but I think it's kind of what he meant. There are three. One is, and I think this is the key one, you have to have a good memory. You have to remember what lies you've told, to which people, when you told them. You have to be very clear about that. You tell the wrong lies to the wrong people, contradict yourself, and you'll be caught out. And then your career as a liar is effectively over. You'll be doubted forevermore. The other major rule, go down with that lie. Even if you have to face the consequences of whatever it is you're lying about, you don't give up that lie. An example, a very extreme example, I guess, would be in court. You've murdered someone, you've always maintained your innocence, you go down for it anyway, but you still don't ever cop to the crime. You stick to your lie to the end, because there's always that element of doubt then, isn't there, that actually you were telling the truth and that something wrong has happened in terms of the truth. And I think that's an interesting one. I'm not sure that's my philosophy there. I am of the other opinion, that you tend to lessen any impact if you hold your hands up and say, okay, I did do that, you got me. You have to be a bit clever about it. You've got to know when the game's up. If you think a lie is going to get you out of it, and you honestly don't feel as if you are going to get the comeuppance, then maybe you do stick to the lie. But I think the worst thing of all is when you do get caught out lying. When you do get punished for something, but you still refuse to admit the culpability. Because then I think the punishment tends to be worse. I think you need to show some remorse. I think you need to be brave enough to say, okay, I'll take my punishment. I did it. Whatever it is. Not murder. That was an extreme example. I don't think Daniel's ever murdered anyone, but he certainly would admit it if he had. Maybe this is why Daniel's a good and accomplished liar, and maybe why I'm not. I'm not trying to make this a moral thing, but, you know, at the end of the day, I don't find myself lying very often. Certainly not seriously. And ultimately, I am the kind of person that sticks his hands up and says, okay, yep, fair cop. And maybe that's why I'm not an accomplished liar. And maybe it's why Daniel's very, very good at it. Or at least, you know, why he's always prepared to do it if he needs to. I think Daniel's other rule, and this is an interesting one, and certainly one which I understand, even if I'm not necessarily been in the position much myself. You've got to convince yourself that you're telling the truth, even if you know that you're lying. You're probably the only one that knows it's a lie. But if you can kind of almost live that lie and in your own head almost change reality, then, you know, you're on your way then. Because if you can convince yourself that something you know to be untrue is true, or vice versa, then I think you can convince anyone pretty much. And I think that's a very interesting rule, and one which I fully understand, but don't recall ever really being in that position. Again, Daniel's obviously got this off to a T. Not casting aspersions, Daniel, that sounds awful. Anyway, the person I was going to talk about, somebody I knew in my childhood. I'm going to call him Lewis. You know, he was a bit of a fibber. You know, he graduated to being a liar. Don't ask me to explain the difference between the two at this point, but that's kind of how I see it. There's fibs and there's lies. He graduated to being a full-blown liar. Two of the most ridiculous lies he ever told me, which I have to confess to being caught out by, mainly because I couldn't imagine why anybody would lie about these things, was one, that his father was a policeman, which is a lie he managed to get away with telling me for probably about 7 or 8 years, from the age of about, you know, 9, before I finally found out that it was absolute bull. A couple of things helped him on his way with that lie. One is that there was once a police car that turned around in our road. This particular person used to stay at his nan's house in the same road that I was brought up in, and that's how I knew him. And there's one time there's a police car turned around at the end of the road, and I said to Lewis, you know, is that your dad? This person driving the police car did look a bit like his dad, I have to say. I'd not really seen his dad up close, and so to me it could have easily been him. But it was my fault really, because I actually shoved that idea into his head. And of course, you know, Lewis said to me, oh yeah, that's my dad, he's just brought me round to my nan's and now he's on his way, you know, on patrol or whatever. And you know, I believed it. Later on, there was another guy down the road who certainly doubted Lewis's story that his father was a policeman. Not sure why. He obviously saw through it, and I hadn't. And, basically, he challenged Lewis to provide some kind of evidence that his dad was a policeman. I'm not sure exactly what he asked him to bring, but he kind of said, well, you know, bring something of his that shows he's a policeman. And straight away, Lewis sort of cottoned on to this and said, oh, I'll bring his hat, which, you know, I suppose looking back, you think, well, why did he choose that? Well, obviously the reason he chose that is because he had access to a police hat, an old police hat of some description, which he'd managed to get hold of. Because sure enough, the next day he brought this police hat with him and said, oh, you know, here's my dad's police hat. He's a policeman. Now do you believe me? And of course, you know, along with the evidence I'd already seen, which I thought I'd seen, which was his dad turning in the road in a police car, I kind of believe this, and I had no reason not to. Like I say, he used to stay around our area because his nan lived there, and so I wasn't aware of his kind of home life, if you like. I didn't know him out of this scenario, and so I couldn't ever really challenge the position. Later on, I found out it was a lie. I think my father attended a school event. Lewis's father was there as well. My father sort of waded in and said something like, oh, you know, with you being a policeman, etc., etc. And Lewis's dad looked at him as if to say, what are you talking about? And my father sort of said, well, you know, you're a policeman, aren't you? And he said, well, no, I'm not. Whatever gave you that idea? And then they had a bit of a chuckle because it was pretty obvious that it was something that Lewis had been saying. And my father told me, I think I was probably about 15, 16 by this stage, ready to go into the sixth form nearly. And, you know, that's when I found out, and I just thought, how ridiculous. I just felt kind of almost shocked by it, but almost not at all shocked. Just thought, well, yeah, he's always been a bit of a liar. Why didn't I see that coming? I don't think I ever really challenged him about it, to be honest. Other than one time a few years later when I was out drinking with some friends, and so was he, and we were all in the same curry house, and his mates were sort of shouting stuff at my mates, and he didn't get nasty, but there was a bit of ill feeling and banter there. And I hadn't really seen Lewis for a few years, and it was obvious that he was going to play up to his mates and not really acknowledge me. And I think this annoyed me, and at one point they were shouting some stuff to my mates, and I sort of shouted back something like, you know, you're pathetic, you pretended your dad was a policeman for, you know, for 8 or 9 years. But of course then he managed to turn it round and make me look stupid by basically shouting it in front of his mates that hadn't I been gullible for believing this for so long, and what a fool I was. And I didn't really see Lewis again after this. I think he went on to manage a particular, to manage a department in a particular group of very large supermarket, a very large supermarket chain. I imagine he probably tells people he's a MI5 agent or something, but he works in Tesco's and basically, I think, puts out spuds and things. But I'm not going to be too dismissive of that. That's not very nice. But there we go. That's Lewis. The other lie he told me, actually, just quickly, the other main one that I really remember and thought, well, you know, what's your problem, really? Because he clearly had a problem. These were two big lies he told, but he was telling lies throughout the whole time I knew him, and I don't know why I put up with it, really. I think I just kind of imagined that he had a bit of an issue, and, you know, it wasn't enough to stop us being fairly good friends at one point. But the other thing that he used to say, there was a picture in his nan's house of a girl sort of a few years older than us in a school uniform. And I once asked him who it was. I knew he had a brother about this age, so, and I'd seen his brother, not very much, but I had seen him. I knew he existed, and I'd heard his nan refer to him, his brother. So once I said to him, well, who's the girl in the picture? And he said it was his sister. I said, oh, I didn't know you had a sister. You never mentioned the sister before. And this was a few years after I'd known him, and I'd certainly never seen a sister. Never heard him mention one. Never heard his nan mention one. And I kind of said, well, you know, she looks about the same age as your brother. And again, I kind of gave him a chance here, didn't I? Because I put the idea in his head that him, his brother and his sister were the same age. And of course he said to me, oh yeah, that's my sister, and she's my elder brother's twin. And again, I didn't really feel the need to question this any further. It seemed odd to me, but who lies about having a sister? So with that, you know, didn't say any more. But I must admit, I was much more suspicious on this occasion because of some of the other lies he'd told me. And once his nan was in the room and he wasn't, I don't know, he'd gone to get a drink or gone to the toilet, and we were around his nan's house having a bit of cake and a cup of tea or whatever, and I said to his nan, oh, you know, is that Lewis's sister? What's her name? And she told me that it was in fact Lewis's elder cousin who lived, you know, somewhere down south or whatever. And again, I was aghast for it. I don't think I ever really challenged him about it. I just thought, what a ridiculous story to tell. But there we go. That's lying. That's how daft some people can be. I mean, I remember, the only lie I can really remember telling about something my dad used to do for a living, which in fact wasn't true, was when I was about four. And I went to school, first year at school, and we were asked to write about what our dads did for a living and draw a picture. And I told everybody that my father was flying with the Red Arrows. Excuse me. And I don't actually believe he could drive at the time, drive a car. So, you know, how he'd be flying Red Arrows is beyond me, really. But anyway, that's what I told people. The teacher went along with it. I think she was probably thinking, well, you know, it's the sort of thing four-year-olds say. He can write, as long as he writes about it and draws a picture of his father in a Red Arrow, then, you know, what harm has been done, really? And I can remember drawing a picture of my father having landed his Red Arrow in our very small back garden. And so he was sat in the cockpit with the sort of canopy open, waving, and I've drawn a picture of that. And then I've drawn a picture of me and my brother stood on each wing of this Red Arrow. And I can remember that vividly. And it's not a lie I stuck to for any length of time. And actually, I can even remember feeling a bit embarrassed about it. You know, thinking, well, what have I told them? He's working for the Red Arrows. He's actually working at ICI Fibres. I think maybe that's why. Not very glamorous, and certainly didn't excite me enough to maybe want to write about it. So that's an awkward one, really. But there we are. Okay, I think that's about it. I've gone on for long enough here today. Work beckons. So thanks for joining me on this fifth edition of The Walk. I think I will try once more for some listener participation. If you can email me with the email subject liar or lying or something like that, to richardp1975@gmail.com, or tweet me with the hashtag liar or lying. Let's stick to lying, shall we? Lying. Hashtag lying. Subject header lying. And basically tell me, you know, the best lie you've ever told. And I shall hopefully be able to read some of those out next week. If you'd rather I didn't use your name, then by all means make sure you tell me that. And I will keep you anonymous. Okay. Well, thanks for joining me again. I've already done this once, haven't I? I shall hopefully be with you again for next week's edition of The Walk. But for now, follow me on Twitter at RichardP1975. I'm Richard Price. This has been The Walk. Goodbye.